You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Have you ever been to a dog show? They can be absolutely fascinating and can also verge on being overwhelming. The variety of events, performances, and demonstrations will put your sneakers to the test. And then there are the dogs, some with names you've never heard of, and some you've never seen on the street or in magazines. It may seem like a busman's holiday for a companion animal veterinarian like myself to attend a dog show, but I had a fabulous time at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Championships held at the Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California in early December. I had the pleasure of interviewing AKC officials on how purebred dog breeders are striving to improve the health of all dogs. I spoke to breeders of some very unique breeds. I learned how their breeds came to be and why they're enamored of this particular dog and not another. I chatted with a canine division police officer. His dog Blitz could lick you to death at one moment and then take down a bad guy the next. I garnered some great tips on teaching your dog how to be a welcome part of your family and why trotting a dog around a ring can assist young students to excel in school. I spoke to so many people and learned so much that this podcast is going to be a three-part series. Tune in next 2 weeks for parts 2 and 3. In case you want to see photos of the dog breeds I mentioned in these segments, go to the Pet Doctor on our website, PetLifeRadio.com, and scroll to these installments. So, sit, stay, listen. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and this is The Pet Doctor, coming to you from the AKC Yukonuba Dog Championships.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
This valuable information comes from your pet. There's nothing like a wagging tail or friendly paw to lift your mood. They're therapeutic and make us feel good. Studies show pets even reduce stress, prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and fight depression. So there you have it. Pets are a daily dose of good health and happiness. Pets add life. To learn more, visit petsaddlife.org.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Susan Hamill, tell me a little bit about, you're saying AKC can really give the potential pet owner a tremendous amount of information as to whether or not this is a breeder that you want to use.
Correct. The AKC thinks that health of purebred dogs is so important that they actually print the health clearances on the registration papers. And that's why it's important to get AKC registered dogs, because they're the only registry that does that. It's www.caninehealthinfo.org.
And this is from AKC.
From AKC. It's CanineHealthInfo.org.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Great information for people who want to get a purebred dog.
Thank you.
Reserve Lieutenant Doug Williams is here right now at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Show with his bloodhound. Tell us a little bit, why are they used so frequently for search and rescue, for instance?
Well, the bloodhound is genetically designed for search and rescue. First of all, it's their olfactory process, as you're probably aware. They have a large surface area inside for collecting of scent. Their ears scoop it up off the ground.
The long nose, if you will.
The ears scoop up the scent off the ground. They're snorting out and sucking back in. The slobber moistens it. It all takes place to process that olfactory information. Then you have a dog that has long legs. It has the capability of running miles after miles after miles. And also it's their temperament. A lot of it has to do with almost their stubbornness. A bloodhound can go out on a scent trail and stay on it mile after mile after mile and not need that maybe immediate attention factor that, let's say, some of the other higher drive dogs like a German Shepherd or a Belgian Shepherd or something would want instant action. A bloodhound can stay on it mile after mile after mile.
Keeps plodding on.
It's the same trail, that's right. And so they're just very good about that. It's actually their stubbornness which just makes them great man trailers.
Now, how are they as a family pet?
They're really not that great as a family pet, and the reason is because of some of the issues. Obviously, the slobber, you have to be used to dealing with that. When they shake their head, they can throw a goober 20 feet across the room, and it always hits on the big screen TV. So you have to deal with that. Also, their stubbornness to some extent. A bloodhound decides it wants to lay on the couch, it's going to lay on the couch. And then you, of course, obedience train a bloodhound is kind of a suggestion. You ask a bloodhound to sit, yeah, they'll sit. Yeah, you can train them out, but they're just a little bit tougher dog, plus they need a lot of exercise.
My name is Christina Miller.
Christina Miller. And Christina, you are with what kind of a dog here at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Show?
I have a canine dog with me today.
Tell us about canines. I have a feeling most people, like myself, aren't that familiar with them.
That's correct. They are a very rare breed. They're actually the national dog of Israel. There are about 1,500 canine dogs in the entire world. We have about 700 in the United States.
Goodness.
Yep, they're a very versatile breed. They do herding. The Israeli army has used them as mine detection dogs and messenger dogs. They've also been used as guide dogs for the blind. They're wonderful house companions. They can be aloof with strangers, so they can be a little standoffish in large venues where there's lots of activity. But at home, they're great dogs. They're great with kids, great with other pets.
Since we're on radio, describe a canine dog. Size, weight, colors?
They're a medium-sized dog, about the size of a Dalmatian. Most everybody knows what a Dalmatian is. They have a double coat, so they have a thick outer coat and a thinner undercoat. The undercoat does shed twice a year, so that is one thing to consider. They aren't very active, even though they are a herding breed. They don't have the drive like the Border Collie does, where they have to have something to do. Since they survived as a pariah dog for so many years, they learned to conserve their energy instead of waste it. So they're just as content to sit with you on the sofa as they are to go out and hike 10, 12 miles if that's your lifestyle.
Fantastic. I'm here today at the Yukonuba AKC Dog Show. And what's your breed?
Cane Corso.
Cane Corso. And some of us do it incorrectly and say Cane Corso. So Cane Corso. Tell us a little bit about it. Describe the dog.
Dog is, according to our standard, it's a medium-large Mastiff type dog. It's primarily a southern Italian farm dog. So
it's gorgeous. It's huge. It almost looks like some people would say maybe a pit bull.
It really no relation to pit bull.
But it has that kind of a look in a way.
A little bit. These guys, you know, it's a farm dog that did some guarding, some hunting, some herding, a little bit of butcher dog type stuff.
What's its lineage?
There's, if you go back far enough, these dogs and Neapolitan Mastiff will intersect.
Okay.
So everything ultimately goes back to the sort of earliest of the Mastiff breeds, and what got us there was that stuff, and along the way a little bit of some various southern Italian hunting dogs to get a little bit more athletic dog. And that's been pretty much it until recently.
So if someone wants a Cane Corso dog, what can they expect from this dog? Good family dog?
Can be.
Okay.
Definitely requires socialization. Definitely requires exercise. So for a big dog, they're pretty high energy.
How much do they typically weigh?
Females are going to be anywhere typically from 85 to about 100 pounds.
Okay.
Males, you can expect anywhere from probably 115 to 130.
These are. And they can be protective?
Certainly protective. It's very much a dog that will bond with the family. So people outside the family, it depends. There's sort of a range of how social they'll be. But with socialization, they can certainly accept anyone. Provided that the person that owns it does a good job of establishing a relationship with the dog, that the dog can trust them and that they're going to take them into the right place, then the dog should be fine with anybody.
Can you have other pets around this particular kind of dog?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have families that have cats, and we have small dogs that live with these guys, and no problem.
Excellent.
So,
any particular health issues people should be concerned with Cane Corsos?
The typical big dog, some orthopedic stuff, and a little bit of cardiac. Fortunately, it's pretty low level. It's not epidemic. So, but hip dysplasia is always a concern on the dog that's this big. So.
Well, it's a gorgeous dog. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And we're here at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Championship. And this dog that you have right now in your lap, which is just a sweetheart, is a Chinese Crested. Is that correct?
He is a powder puff Chinese Crested. There are two varieties.
All right.
This is the haired variety, which is the powder puff. And there's the hairless variety, that is the more well-known variety of dog, is the hairless. But there are two kinds of dogs that are born in every litter, powder puff and hairless. And you have to have a powder puff or you have a lethal gene in the hairless one because it's the dominant gene. So we need our powder puffs.
All right, very good. Describe them for people who've never seen a Chinese Crested, powder puff or non-powder puff.
They're 11 to 13 inches tall. They are a square dog, a slightly longer in the back. They stand very square. They don't have a lot of angulation like a hound dog or anything like that would. They are known for their beautiful crests on the top of their head. And the haired variety, they have long coats that grow all the way down to the floor. The older they get, the longer they grow until they're all the way down to the floor. In the hairless variety, they just have hair on the crest, on the plume, which is their tail, and on their hocks, which is their feet.
Is this a naturally occurring genetic divergence to get the hairless?
Yes, it is a naturally occurring gene that they've been around for centuries and centuries. We've traced them back. They used to say that they thought that they came from old China, but they don't. They actually come from Africa. They're closely related to sighthounds like Salukis.
So you wonder how they got the name Chinese Crested?
Because the Chinese whaling vessels, which traveled the world in the 1300s to 1500s, carried them on board Pittsburgh to chase vermin, and they kept them because of their great personalities to be pets on board. And one of the reasons why the breed is as close to standard as it is because on a whaling vessel, or on a trading vessel rather, not a whaling vessel, on a trading vessel, dogs that didn't conform to the standard that they were trying to breed just
went overboard.
So
all out,
the best survive.
Right. Sink or swim, so to speak, for the breed.
The thing that is said often about a Chinese Crested is they're a large dog in a small dog's body. They do not have a toy dog personality.
And we're here with Black Russian Terriers. They're gorgeous dogs. I have never heard of them. And tell us a little bit about them.
The Black Russian Terriers is a Russian guard dog, originally bred for the KGB.
All right.
After World War II, in the 40s and 50s, the Red Star Kennel, which is a Russian kennel, military-sized kennel, took the dogs that they had, primarily Giant Schnauzer, Airedale Terrier, Rottweiler, and Newfoundland. There's 17 total breeds. They did some breeding back and forth trying to establish a breed that will be a police dog that was trainable enough, but also calm enough to take home to their families so that they weren't, they have breeds in Russia that are so vicious, they can't, only one person can ever be near the dog. So they need something that will be able to turn on and off.
Okay.
Eventually, they came up with the Black Russian Terrier. 1957 is when they first were brought to the shows and shown to the general public, and some of the puppies were sold to the general breeders and public from the Red Star Kennel, which was the original military kennel. But
describe what does it look like? And you're saying Schnauzer. When I first looked at him, I didn't know.
They primarily look like a giant Schnauzer on steroids.
All right.
It's the easiest way to describe the dog.
How many
males,
pounds?
The males average between 120 to 150 pounds at about between 27 to about 32 inches tall for a male. The females are a little bit smaller, between 25 to about 28 inches is the average, and about 70 to about 100 pounds. So a little bit small.
Now I noticed you have a young son who's running around playing with a dog.
Correct. Very first time I had a Black Russian in my house, it was a client's dog. I show dogs professionally. Brought the dog in the house, she had the run of the house. Not a single person walked through my front door unless I said, oh yes, come on in. And she would stand in front of the door with the door wide open and would not let the kids go out. She just stood there. Didn't do anything to them. Stood up every time they tried to come to the door and just wouldn't let them get through.
As soon as a
person came to my door and knocked, she would stood up in full attention. And as soon as I said, oh, hi, come on in, she would go lay down. Never trained her to do any of that. A natural reaction. The female that I have with me today, she's 13 months old. She took to basic obedience in 3 days. Very intelligent.
So any particular medical issues people need to be concerned with?
Like most large breeds, they have a history. Same thing with the Newfoundlands. They have hip problems, so that is something that's in their background. They have heart conditions. As a breeder, those are things that we try to breed around. If there is problems with that, we try to not use the line any longer, try to breed away from it. But in general, they're fairly healthy.
I hope you've been enjoying learning about some new breeds. I'll be right back after this commercial break with information about a dog with four very different looks, four totally different names, and they're all varieties of one breed. Keep listening.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Hello, I'm Deborah Wolf, and I'm inviting you to my animal party on Pet Life Radio. The dress code? Come as you are. Pajamas, a tux, you can even go naked like your pets. Unleash your party animal at my animal party. Guests you know from Animal Planet, TV, radio, the news, and bookstores will be joining me. And that's because after I won Best Pet Radio in America from the DWAA, I got my paw in the door and I met a lot of amazing people. And the best of the best are going to be coming to the party. They're coming to party with us. So join us at the animal party. Don't miss the party.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
So I'm here with Bruce Freeman, and these are Belgian Shepherds that are surrounding me, and they all look so different.
That's because there's actually four varieties of Belgian Shepherds.
All right.
In the United States, they're broken into actually four different breeds. In the rest of the world, there's four varieties, one breed.
Okay.
So you have the short hair, brown and black dogs. Those are Belgian Malinois. Commonly used a lot in police and military applications. Although they have made great family dogs as well, all Belgians are excellent herders. And then you have the long hair, same coloring, brown with the black tips. That's a Belgian Tiburon. And then also you have the long hair black dog, which are called Belgian Sheepdogs here. In the rest of the world, they're also called Groenendaals. And then we have a fourth variety, and all of them have the same conformation. The fourth variety is called a Belgian Lakenwalk.
Right.
And they have a coat that's similar in texture to an Airedale. Okay, it's a wired hair dog.
And these are all one breed?
Well, in the rest of the world, we're all one breed with four varieties. In the United States, since 1959, we were broken into separate individual breeds. But all of us have the same conformation. The boys are all in the same ideal range. The girls are in the same ideal range. These are square dogs, very agile. They excel at agility. They've got hundreds of years of breeding behind them for herding, so they're among the top herding dogs in the country.
How many pounds for most of them?
The male and female. On average, the girls are going to go between 40 to 50 pounds, and on average, the boys are going to go from about 60 to 75.
Okay.
The ideal range for the boys is 22 to 26 inches, and the girls is 22 to 24 inches.
Why would somebody want to have one of these dogs as a family pet?
Well, let me just show you the picture. I think that while you're interviewing me for vocal media, what you're looking at are babies
are
playing with other babies.
Yes.
These are dogs that have a real affinity for children. They are herding dogs, but they were designed to work with a companion. Their breeding is that they're European farms. So in the morning, the shepherd would take the dog. The sheep would be in the pen, and dogs would drive the sheep out into the pasture. And at the end of the day, they would drive
them
back to the pen. So, and the dog would stay, you know, traditionally either in the house with the shepherd, or they would, you know, in a house outside. These days, they're indoor pets. But
These are very intelligent, very fast, and agile dogs. And if you have any interest in doing any kind of dog sports, agility, ring sports, Schützen, although those are not AKC approved events, but those are both obedience and training, guard training. These dogs are just as pets. They are they attach to their owners. They want to please their owners. They're very happy, upbeat dogs, and they're very protective.
Stubborn?
No, they are not stubborn. They are. They may play by a different set of rules than you wish at times, but they're not. But they are not stubborn.
All right.
But they are high energy, and when you couple that with intelligence, it means that you have a dog that's like a
maybe smarter than you. So you have
yeah,
to stay on top
it's
of it.
A little bit. It's a little bit dangerous at times. Yes, especially me. They've got better memories than I do, and that's tough. But if you, they are superb agility dogs. They're obviously superb herding dogs. They make great obedience dogs, and they make great pets. As a breeder, when we temperament test our puppies, we try to place our puppies with the personality of the people that come to inquire about our dogs. A lot of times they're fit. A lot of times I send people away even if they have money in their hands, because we want to make sure our dogs are with the right people. We don't want to put a hard dog, in other words, a dog that's very dominant, in with a family with small children. We want to place a dog in there that's open and gregarious and is going to lick that little kid in the face all day long. So that's what we try to do is both as a breed and as breeders. We try to take the responsibility and place the best dog in the best home.
Being responsible breeders, what are some health issues that are
okay.
concerned?
Belgians overall, okay, no matter what flavor of Belgian you're looking at, there is about a 17% incidence of seizure disorders, whether it's from hypothyroidism or epilepsy. Now, as conscientious breeders, we all try to breed away from it. Okay, hip dysplasia, elbow dysplasia, is very small in Belgians. They have exceptional hips. They are going to be, I would say 90% of the dogs that I've seen bred are rated either good to excellent.
Fantastic.
So, we've really done a good job there. But like any breed, there's going to be some inherent type of genetic disorder of some sort. I mean, you can't say that a dog is going to be healthy forever.
Neither are people.
Yeah, exactly. But our risks are relatively low for most things. We see a little Pio every now and then in the girls. We see a little Addison's. We see a very small but significant instance of gastric cancer. Okay. However, as a breed, we are funding research programs to find the genetic markers for epilepsy, and we are finding the genetic markers for gastric cancer. We have studies going on at the University of Texas that we fund, and also at the Michigan State University.
I think that's one of the things that's so great about people that are involved in AKC and these breed clubs, because you know your dogs, you know some of their pitfalls, some of the problems that are associated, and then you're funding studies that help not just your breed,
right.
but all dogs in general.
Exactly, exactly. It's very important to us that we even get involved in health studies that aren't necessarily a problem in our breed, just because all three breed clubs, AKC breed clubs. The Lac and Noir is now in the miscellaneous class, so it doesn't have full breed recognition. All the Belgian breed clubs set a portion of their revenues aside to fund health studies, because we feel it's the right thing to do. And even if it doesn't affect us directly, if we can help the dog community, that's what we're going to do.
And Janet, we're here with German pinschers.
Yes.
Now, I have to admit, I've never seen a German or a pinscher before. If I have, I didn't know that I was seeing one. Describe to the listeners What does it look like?
What does it look like? What a German pincher looks like is very similar to what people think a Doberman looks like, only more moderate in size.
They're how many pounds?
Between 17 and 20 inches in height, between 30 and 40 pounds. If you think of them, they're like the middle pincher. There's a Minute Pin, which everybody's familiar with, the toy dog. There's a Doberman, which everybody's familiar with, has a larger dog. And this is the middle pincher. This is in between the two.
Did it originate from either one?
No, actually, they did not originate from either one. They split off from the standard schnauzers. Originally, in the standard schnauzers, in litters, they don't hold a chair. Standard schnauzers used to have two coat types represented in each litter. There was a smooth-coated standard smooth-coated schnauzer, which evolved into the German pincher, and there is the rough-coated schnauzer, which is now the standard schnauzer. So, while there's some similarities, there have, over the time, over the years, they've evaluated, or they've evolved in that they have a little less bone than the standard schnauzer. They can be a little bit taller than the standard schnauzer as well. But their personalities are very similar as far as they're very happy, high energy. They can be manipulative, a little bit like a terrier, in that they can really, you know, train us as much as we train them.
Good with children and other pets?
They are good with children if they're raised with children. Like any dog, you have to supervise them and you have to know what you're doing. You can't just turn dogs loose with children without support. So I'm the PR chair for the German Pincher Club of America. We recommend them for the experienced dog owner due to their high level of energy, their need for a lot of exercise.
So be a good agility dog?
Oh, an amazing agility dog. His litter mate is already trained in agility, just waiting to mature. So very good agility, very good obedience dogs, and just an all-around companion. For somebody who has an athletic lifestyle or an active lifestyle, they will hike with you forever. They will run and play and keep themselves entertained. And they're just a great all-around dog. Like I say, they're small enough to be compact.
Transportable.
Call them the portadogs because they're just a little bit smaller. And they have, and as a veterinarian, you're probably nervous, they have very few health issues.
Excellent.
Yes. And so that's really nice. And part of the German Pincher Club's motto is that our goal is to keep them free of genetic health issues. So we test a lot, do a lot of testing and a lot of selective breeding to make sure that we don't bring in any diseases.
Now, like the Doberman, I noticed they have cropped ears and cropped tail. Now, is this going to be something that this breed has to have for AKC?
It is not a fault. They have them. They're shown equally correct traditionally. They're cropping dogs. There are those that, you know, choose not to, and there's still an option here.
Oh, Janet, thank you very much. I've learned a lot now about German pinchers. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
We're here right now with Finnish Spitz. Tell us a little bit about the Finnish Spitz. How many there are in the United States? What do they look like?
They look like red foxes, basically. The standard actually says they're supposed to be foxy in appearance. There's probably not more than 1,000 of them in the United States. It's a relatively rare breed.
So I shouldn't feel too bad that I haven't seen a lot.
No, not at all. I mean, there's in California, I think we have probably 3 or 4 breeders, major breeders. Oregon, I think there's 1 or 2. But several in Texas, a couple in Arizona, New Mexico area. East Coast, there's really only 2. So there's not a lot of breeders, probably not more than 12 breeders in the country. We usually average less than 10 litters a year bred. So, I mean, you can see why there's not a lot of them around.
What are their fine points?
Their fine points are their characteristic, basically their temperament and everything is cat-like in nature.
Oh.
They are very clean, very fastidious dogs. They're a little bit aloof. They have a cat-like...
Sounds like a cat.
Yeah, they have a cat-like personality. They own you. You don't own them. They love you. They're very family-oriented, but, I mean, they'll come over and sit next to you to be petted. They don't necessarily want to be in your lap or held, and when they want to get down and go sit in the corner, they want to get down and go sit in the corner, and they will. And if they had a motto, it would be, been there, done that. You know, they don't like to do the same thing over and over and over again, so you've got to be creative with them. They're a tough dog to train for obedience for that reason, because if you read the obedience books, it says take them outside to same location, 30 minutes, same time every day, and work them. Well, by the time you take them the third day, they're going to look at you with this, I've done it, you want to do it, have at it, I'm going over here and see if there's a squirrel. Because they're naturally, they're a hunting dog in Finland.
Okay.
And they hunt everything from what's called a capercaillie, which looks like a wood grouse here in this country, up to and including bear and caribou and elk. They will go in water and retrieve duck.
Now, these are small dogs.
These are small dogs, but very versatile in their hunting techniques. They will usually go out from the hunter about 200 yards and search left to right 300 yards. And their barking will tell the hunter where they're at. They'll come back every 15 minutes to maybe a half hour and look to see where their hunter is. And the hunter can hear, and by the tone of their bark, you know if they're either in chase of a bird to put it on a tree or if they've got it treed. And once they get it treed, they'll change the bark, they'll wag that tail, they'll keep the bird's attention, the hunter will come in, shoot the bird, they'll retrieve it and take it back. So,
are there barky dogs at home? I know right now that your little honey's just excited about what's going on around.
When they get excited, they'll bark. But I mean, if you've got them in the house or in the apartment, they're not going to bark unless they have a reason. You know, if somebody knocks on the door, they'll alert, you know. It's not a dog that you would live in a small neighborhood where your neighbor lives, you know, 10 feet from your backyard, and you'd put them out at 6 in the morning and go to work and come home at 6 at night, and your neighbor didn't want it. You'd probably come home and have a dead dog. Because if they saw a cat, they saw a squirrel, they saw a barker, they're going to spend 15 minutes barking. And, you know, in the summertime, if they get the windows open, they're going to brush them crazy.
But about health issues? Any particular health issues for them?
No major health issues at all. Only thing we have had occasional things seen is luxated patellas, and that's because they're fairly straight front and straight rear balanced dogs, because they're going up trees and everything. But that's very rare and not on a normal basis, and you do that with OFA, you don't have to check.
I have only had one dog ever fail OFA, and it was on a hip dysplasia. One hip was slightly flat. I've done patellas and everything on all. I've never had it.
And I use pan hip on mine. Mine pretty much come out in the top 10% of all dogs in the country.
It's a very healthy. But we are vigilant about doing those tests to make sure.
I think that's one of the great things about these breed clubs, is that you are so concerned with your particular breed, and you have reputable breeders.
I do elbows, hips, and knees, and I also do eyes.
Awesome.
And, you know, and so it's a very good breed. We've had them a long time. So is she. I'm the current president of the Finnish Spitz Club of America. She's the incoming president of the Finnish Spitz Club of America. I'm an AKC judge. I judge the breeds and everything. So.
Well, Rowdy Yates, thank you very much for giving my listeners a little background on myself on Finnish Spitz.
Well, thank you very much, ma'am. We appreciate your stopping by.
No matter what kind of dog you want, one that can protect your property, your children, or just the couch. If you want one that loves cold weather or prefers to snuggle under the covers with you at night, the AKC can help you find the perfect pet. Go to www.akc.org, where you can also see footage from the 4th Annual Agility Invitational and the 15th Annual Obedience Invitational that were also taking place at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Championships held in Long Beach, California. Listen to The Pet Doctor next week on PetLifeRadio.com for part 2 of this series. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Remember, no matter where you get your dog, cat, bunny, or any pet, do your homework first. Be sure that you're ready. It's for life. Their life.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.